Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Christopher Camacho has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Christopher rocks. Be like Christopher. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the greatest daily tech news for Tuesday, March 26, 2019 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from a finally sunny Finnish countryside, I'm Patrick Beja.
And from a standard LA County sun, warm land, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We have got a lot of great emails. It's a Talk Back Tuesday today. But first, let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Google launched AMP for email, coming to Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Outlook, and mail.ru. AMP for email allows functions like RSVP, questionnaires, or browsing store inventory to happen within the email client itself. AMP emails still use standard HTML as a fail-safe in email clients that don't support AMP.
Huawei announced the P30 and P30 Pro in Paris on Tuesday. The P30 Pro is a 6.47-inch OLED Android phone and has a quad camera system with up to 10 times lossless zoom and a small cutout for the camera on the front screen and AI help with photos. The P30 Pro has no headphone jack or earpiece, using the screen vibration to generate call sounds, and also includes reverse wireless charging. The smaller P30 is a 6.1 inches with a three-camera system and a headphone jack. The P30 costs €799, and the P30 Pro starts at €999, ranging up to €1,249 on sale immediately in Europe.
Asus confirmed that, yes, indeed, its live update tool had been targeted by an advanced persistent threat, as discovered by Kaspersky Lab. We mentioned it yesterday. Asus customer service has been reaching out to affected users, and Asus says the backdoor exploit has been fixed in the latest version of its live update software. It has also introduced end-to-end encryption and more security verification tools for customers. Let's talk a little bit about the bad news for Samsung.
Indeed, Samsung warned it would report disappointing financial results for the first 3 months of the year due to chip and LCD screen price drops, which points to further slowing of demand for smartphones and other gadgets. Samsung's update follows a 7% decline in smartphone shipments globally during the fourth quarter of 2018, the fifth quarterly decline, according to an analysis by the Hong Kong-based research firm Counterpoint.
Yeah, so, you know, the short version is Samsung not having a problem selling its own phones, Samsung feeling the pressure of just smartphones in general not selling as well as they used to because they sell the parts that make them.
So it's essentially a confirmation, another point, as we just said, that shows, yeah, they're not selling, no one is selling as many smartphones, or maybe I shouldn't say no one, but overall, there are a lot less smartphones being sold than there were before, and it makes sense.
The smartphone
market, Samsung's getting a lot of attention, like, ooh, this is rare from Samsung, but I assume that this is going to be the trend for Samsung's rivals as well.
I think it hits Samsung because they make phones and they're a very important parts supplier with their memory chips and such and screens.
That too.
But it's, well, okay. It's interesting because some phones are just, some phone companies are just now hitting their stride and creating really compelling lower priced phones or mid-range phones. And the market is shrinking or not growing as much as it used to. So I wonder what's going to happen to those who don't have time to evolve their business into something more.
Look at Nokia and BlackBerry to find out.
A paper published in preliminary form ahead of its presentation at the IEEE Symposium on Security and Privacy describes potential privacy and security risks of preloaded software on Android. The study looked at 82,501 pre-installed Android apps across 1,700 devices made by 214 vendors. It found that a large number of actors tracked and obtained personal information without the user being aware of it, and most can't be deleted. Most third-party SDKs for advertising used SDKs for advertising and user tracking. Self-signed certificates often made it difficult to know who even developed the app that you downloaded, and often standard app permission requests are sidestepped with custom permissions, sometimes in the hundreds. The researchers recommend the implementation of global certificates and documentation of the pre-installed apps.
Yeah, you didn't even download these. They just came installed. And what this paper is trying to shine a light on is Google may feel like, hey, but they're our partners. It's good. It's fine. But Google actually isn't involved in all these partnerships. A lot of times it's with the vendors. Those partnerships may go through varying levels of vetting depending on the vendor and what their practices are. And so just because it's pre-installed doesn't mean it's entirely safe, whether through incompetence or maliciousness. And it's really hard to audit these kinds of apps because they're pre-installed. That to me seems to be the biggest takeaway of this report.
Yeah, I was asking you before the show, Tom, as an end user, what can you do? Well, you get mad at Google, really, because it's something that Google can tackle, but the rest of us don't have much to say about it.
Yeah, it would seem like something really Google should have been worried about with the emphasis on privacy that's been brewing for at least a couple of years now. It's surprising to me that they didn't. Or maybe they are starting to work on this issue and it's such a mess because they have so many partners across the Android ecosystem. But it feels pretty bad to me in today's privacy-conscious world.
Yeah, and the Google response to this, I have to say, is not as sincere as it has been to other privacy-related things. They're a tiny bit dismissive. I think partly because they're like, well, we can't control what vendors do. But they could. That's one of the things that they're getting, brought in front of antitrust regulators for, is having influence over all these vendors in lots of ways. This is a way they could exercise that influence. The European Parliament approved the new copyright directive Tuesday, 348 to 278. It includes Article 11, sometimes the one referred to as a link tax, and what was Article 13, but has now been renumbered to Article 17. We'll keep calling it Article 13 for clarity's sake, but if you see it referred to as 17, that's why. It requires companies to demonstrate they're taking action to prevent copyright infringement. It does not apply to cloud storage, and it exempts parody. Now, Article 11 is the one that gives news organizations the right to, quote, the online use of their press publications by information society service providers. However, it allows for sharing of hyperlinks, individual words, or very short extracts of a press publication. Anything beyond that, though, requires permission. Article 13, the one that's now in the final draft, Article 17, declared that copyright infringement shouldn't happen, but leaves it up to member countries and companies on how to combat it. And a recent draft stated, according to Ars Technica, cooperation between online content service providers and rights holders shall not result in the prevention of the availability of works or other subject matter uploaded by users which do not infringe copyright and related rights. So in order to avoid liability on Article 13, you could put in an algorithmically generated upload filter, but you shouldn't prevent people from putting up works that they do have the right to do. They basically say, don't do anything bad. That's the new law. Member states will now need to approve these directives and implement them. After they've approved them, they have 2 years to implement them. And most legal experts say that the effect of the directive will depend a lot on how it's implemented. This is typical for directives of this kind, as each member nation translates it into its nation's specific law. Patrick, I know you had some insight about this as well.
I don't know about insight. Some measure of despair, maybe. I mean, I'm on the record, I think, in the American/English-speaking world as saying, you know, sometimes you need governments to get involved, and it's important for regulations to happen because companies aren't going to regulate themselves, and you need someone to be looking out for the other side of the relationship there. And people often respond to me, yeah, but then governments become overbearing and they create regulations that are impossible to understand and that will hamper the efforts of some of the smaller companies, et cetera, et cetera. I think I still stand by my initial statement. I think this is a good example of the latter, of the example of the cases where indeed government can maybe try to please everyone and ends up maybe pleasing no one. The problem with this law and with these two articles specifically, is how vague they are.
Yeah.
It is extremely difficult for a company to do business when you don't know how you can respect the law. The key issue, I think, in Article 11, it's the link tax, which decides what you can and can't use, is very short extracts. Because you still have the right to quoting something, fair use essentially, but it says you can do it beyond very short extracts. And we don't know. No one knows what very short extracts means. Right. So it's essentially going to have to go to the courts, my lawyer wife's analysis. And I think it makes sense. The courts are going to have to say, well, this fits and this doesn't.
Right. Because Slovakia could say it means something different than Italy, than France. And then it all goes up to the European Court of Justice. And then that's where it finally gets remedied, right?
Yeah, and I think it could even be as vague in the local implementations, which doesn't help anyone. So this is kind of a SMH moment, shake my head and facepalm. I'm certain there would have been better ways of doing this. And the content ID type thing, the filter, is, I mean, I could talk about that for another 2 days.
See previous 5 years of DTNS.
Yeah. I think the effects of this law are being exaggerated a little bit by the people who are against it, myself included. I've been guilty of that. Ultimately, it will end up somewhere in the middle. But the goal is definitely to protect a very important content industry in Europe that has been lobbying for this. And I don't think it was I doubt it was the right way to do it, but we'll see.
The link tax one is vague enough, right? And I think Google is over exaggerating when they say, well, this is what we'll have to do, which is show no pictures and just the name of the publication. That is exaggerating. But Article 13, now 17, is the one where they're like, just don't do anything bad, okay? Don't allow any copyright infringement, but also don't stop people from using their fair use rights. Got it? Okay, great. You all just don't.
Yeah, you got 2 years. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the example of Content ID on YouTube is the exact case for the application of that law, which we know how many issues it creates. So in that situation, YouTube, for example, is damned if they do and damned if they don't, because they do have issues with the algorithm, et cetera, et cetera.
I can't remember if it was Alsup or someone else, but someone in the European Union said, well, they'll just have to get innovative, which is that's always a great basis mm-hmm. for a law.
Especially when you're forced.
Yeah.
Forced innovation works.
Just
well.
Do it better. Oh, damn it. Right, I had my thought of that.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Reminding us.
Yeah. I'll add one last thing, and I'm sure it will launch some people into a frenzy, but the right to be forgotten was much maligned before it was voted into law, and I don't think it has created the maelstrom of censorship and despair that some people were predicting. I'll leave it to that.
Sure. It hasn't been as bad as some people said. I think that's certainly fair to say. You got the next one.
I have the next one. Settle down. I lost my place. Oh, there you go. Okay. Breathe. All right. Let's talk about Apple. That will make me happy. Apple introduced Apple Arcade Monday, giving you access to multiple video games across phone, tablet, Apple TV, and Mac for one monthly price coming this autumn. We don't know how much it will cost or how revenue will be split with developers. Apple did say it's funding development of the games, although we don't know if it's all the games that will be on the service or some of them. Mm. The Verge's Andrew Webster notes that while most developers he talked to were cautiously optimistic, there was a concern that it could negatively affect paid game sales. It's not clear if Arcade will be out of reach for most developers. Apple touted mobile exclusivity of its Arcade titles. This is an interesting one. I think it tries to answer an issue that developers of mobile games have had since the launch of the App Store, in that it's very hard to compete with free. Most games that are super popular are free games, especially with an audience that is maybe usually more casual, made of casual gamers who would rather try a game first and see what happens than pay up front. Potentially, this could be an interesting way of Apple to get people to pay for paid games. Of course, free games will not be part of that service, but I think a lot of people will be likely to subscribe to this and thus effectively pay for games on a more regular basis than would have previously. And they're also having an interesting approach with very talented game developers, very peculiar types of games. So I think overall, most people I've seen discuss this are quite positive about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's good in that it helps the people who want to make a game that you just download and play offline and you don't want to have to keep buying donuts or coins or whatever. But, you know, when they're signing up Will Wright, the creator of SimCity, or Hironobu Sakaguchi, the Final Fantasy mastermind, it's impressive. Like, those are going to be great games, but it makes me wonder if we're going to continue to see the small developers be able to come up, because Apple would be picking the winners and losers by picking who gets into this program.
Well, the alternative is mostly no one pays for paid games. I'm exaggerating, sure, of course. Some people do, but the big issue that we've seen in the gaming world is that it's very, very difficult to get people to pay for games on mobile. And they're still going to be there. I think it's still going to be an option. But overall, I would suspect that it would be added to the overall revenue for these developers than if it didn't exist. Mm.
The BBC has pulled its podcasts from the Google Podcast app and also Google Assistant. The BBC's Director of Distribution and Business Development, Kieran Clifton, said that the company is not comfortable with Google's practice of directing users to search for podcasts in the Google app rather than BBC Sounds, which is BBC's own app, or other third-party services. Clifton said that the company asked to be excluded from this feature, but Google declined. So the BBC said, well, fine, we're going to pull the podcast then completely. Clifton also criticized Google over making it difficult to obtain audience data, which makes it harder to personalize services, among other things. The BBC is blocking Google simply through a robots.txt entry.
Yeah, I love that part of the story the most. Like, BBC didn't ask for a law. They just used a robots.txt file, which Google respects. Good for Google for respecting the robots.txt file. That's why it's there. I think Chris Welch at The Verge actually did point out something important, which is if you read that BBC post, it does feel like they're more upset about the difficulty obtaining audience data than they are about the redirection of users to within the Google Podcast app. They just use that as
audience data is something that the BBC wants. This is a huge broadcasting corporation taking their services off.
I'm not saying it's going to sink the Google Podcast app, but I think the Google Podcast app was having a hard enough time getting some traction. This is certainly not going to help it.
I believe that you also can't add a podcast by URL in the Google Podcast app.
No, you can't add it manually, unless they've added that recently and I'm not unaware of it. I know for a long time you couldn't. So,
what are you doing, Google?
Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, you can subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com, which is available on the Google Podcast app. So check that out, DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on others at DailyTechNewsShow.reddit.com. We're also on Facebook, Facebook.com/groups/DailyTechNewsShow. Let's check in with Chris Christensen, the amateur traveler, who's back with reasons to perhaps turn off geotagging on your next trip.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech and Travel Minute. And today we're talking about geotagging and some of the negative things that we are seeing in the real world because of it. So you're in Africa and you see a rhino. What do? You pull out your cell phone and you take a picture. Turns out that poachers are now using the geotagged information from unsuspecting tourists to find where animals are so they can poach them, which is not something we expected to have happen. The other thing that we're seeing is places like the Grand Tetons National Park are seeing specific sites in the backcountry that are starting to get overwhelmed with tourists because some influencers posted a picture of a particular spot and people are trying to get to that spot to take that picture. And that increase in tourism is causing erosion and traffic problems on some of these smaller trails. So you can turn off geotagging, but will you and should you? I'm Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
I mean,
or maybe deliberately post the wrong place in certain places.
Yeah. I don't know how you do that. It's just automatic geotagging. It's either on or off.
Yes, I guess that's true. Well, you know, it's on Instagram, you can get creative, but yeah.
Well, that's different than geotagging.
Right. Yes. Right. Well, yeah, Instagram suggests things based on.
I assumed you meant the geotagging that's in your photo, like your photo contains metadata.
Where do people get them? Because I think most services nowadays strip away the precise geotagging.
Yeah.
There are certain apps that will bake it in. So yeah, it's good to know whether your photo has that baked in or
You might want to just check that out and turn it off because you might be inadvertently revealing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's check out the mailbag in mega terms. It's Talkback Tuesday. Kick us off, Sarah.
All right. Nick wanted to chime in on new Switch rumors. We talked about this yesterday. Nick says, Nintendo has always done mid-cycle refreshes of their handhelds. According to Wall Street video game analyst Michael Pachter on his YouTube Q&A show, Pachter Factor, Nintendo sees the Switch as a handheld and they have user data that shows over half of all Switch users play in handheld mode. So a mid-cycle refresh is very normal for Nintendo in this case. Also, an upgraded Switch definitely doesn't need to be as powerful as the Xbox One X, 110, as they would be targeting the built-in screen, which is the current Switch, which is only 720p, but looks nice and sharp.
I agree with some of the things Nick is saying. I would disagree with Michael Pachter on the Pachter Factor.
I assume it's Pachter because Pachter would rhyme with maybe. Factor. Yeah.
I don't know that Nintendo sees their Switch as a mobile only or mainly mobile. If half the people are using it mobile, half of them are using it at home. But regardless, I was listening to the show yesterday or earlier today, and I was grumbling in my head because indeed Nintendo does do mid-cycle refreshes. That's a very frequent thing for the Game Boy, the DS, the DSi. And you were asking, oh, I wonder what thing Nintendo could add to the high-end console to get people to buy it. Well, guess what? Anything, and people will rush to buy it, especially core gamers who are in love with the Switch as their second or third device. It's incredible how they manage to create that affection for it. And it doesn't need to be as powerful as the Xbox One X. I don't think it would have an upgraded screen necessarily. Maybe it's possible. Maybe on the power CPU, GPU side, they would go to the Tegra 2 or whatever updated version of that. It's currently using the first version. And the lower spec version also makes a lot of sense. It seems it would also be portable and a home version. But essentially, the big difference between the Switch and the other home consoles or even portables is that you can have a lot of them in your home. So you would be very happy to buy a more powerful one and give away your, hand over your previous one to a sibling or an offspring or someone else.
Yes, I failed Planet Earth yesterday when I didn't make it very clear that I meant merely GameCube, Wii, and Wii U when I said Nintendo doesn't do mid-cycle refreshes. I assumed you people knew I wasn't talking about the 3D, 3DS, but that was a wrong assumption. That said, I like Nick's email about the idea of the lower-end Switch sort of being the 3DS successor, and I like your points about the higher-end one being for those avid gamers who look at the mm-hmm. Switch as their second console and want it to be more powerful. I think that makes a lot of sense. We got a lot of emails about the credit card. Brian said, when a metal credit card is replaced due to expiration or theft, the credit card company will often send you a special return envelope to turn in the old card for destruction. So that's good to know. And then Chris had some thoughts on the Apple card. He says it's the same as any other credit card, no late fees, but if you're late with your payment, they will raise your interest rate. It's all on their website. It didn't say anything about over-the-limit fees, but I wouldn't be surprised if they raise your rate too. The way they incorporate the card with the wallet is great, but that's just another selling point to get people in debt. Just my two cents. Keep up the great work, Chris. I looked on the website and they do say variable APRs range from 13.24% to 24.24%. Yikes, based on credit worthiness. And late or missed payments will result in additional interest accumulating toward your balance. I don't know if that means they actually raise your rate immediately, but it certainly means what any revolving credit limit means, which is you will continue to see what you didn't pay get interest accumulated on top of it.
And like the fine print on lots of credit cards, those APRs do get raised when you do things like not pay things on time or not pay your minimum.
For sure.
Well, all right, let's move on to Allison Sheridan, who was actually our guest yesterday. And she wrote in just with a little bit of clarification about the new News Plus app. Allison says, we talked yesterday about most of the Wall Street Journal being in Apple News Plus, with the exception of business news that Brian Stelter over at CNN had mentioned. He had seen a Wall Street Journal internal memo that said, that's actually not going to be part of this. Allison says, I tried it out yesterday and was reading an article that had links to other articles at the bottom. I clicked one and immediately was had to upsell to pay for a full subscription. So basically, she got dumped into the Wall Street Journal asking her to pay more. Allison says, I can live with them eliminating stuff, but doing the upsell within the app, untenable to me.
Yeah, I saw another story claiming sources were telling them that you'd get 3 days worth of archives of the Wall Street Journal in the News Plus app. And then after that, you'd get kicked out. But I have not seen the upselling yet. I'll have to keep an eye out for that.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tap iPhone.
So yeah, if you annoying, do though. Have a if you do have a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, do you get all of your articles available in the Apple News Plus app?
No.
Oh, so you have to go to switch to the Wall Street Journal website.
Yeah, and in fact, that's kind of annoying because I subscribe to the Scientific American and get access to all of my issues that I've subscribed to going back years in the Scientific American app, and there's no way to link that account to get access within the News Plus app. I mean, that's not that big a deal. I just go to the Scientific American app to do that, but at least I haven't found out a way to do that yet. Also, can't find anything from the New York Times. It seems to be buried, or if it's there, it's not immediately obvious.
Well, listen, in France, we don't even have the Apple News app at all. So consider yourselves lucky.
And then related to last week, Vince had a couple thoughts about Facebook storing passwords in plain text. He said diagnostic capturing is done out of band of the normal development cycle by injecting something into the runtime, which routinely includes visibility of secrets. There are ways to mitigate this, and Facebook had an unusually long retention, but it's not surprising. Second is that the way enterprise security audits often work is they start with the core of a system and expand out in layers, with the caveat that at a certain number of failed controls, the audit is considered failed, stopped, and scheduled again in like 6 months. So if in January this year Facebook found a system this far out of the standard application data flow, it means their core systems likely have solid security controls in place and working.
So it's actually a good thing.
Interesting perspective from Vince on that. But I think Bart Bouchat might disagree with you. He had a different perspective on this in the NosillaCast podcast this weekend, which is worth checking out to hear.
Talkback Tuesday was fun. Let's do it again next Tuesday. Thanks to everybody who writes in with really good questions and comments. You help make us smarter, and we thank you. Also, thanks to Patrick Beja for being with us on Tuesday. Patrick, where do people keep up with your other work?
Oh, I guess if you like tech and French, you could listen to Le Rendez-vous Tech, which is a tech show in French that I do every week. And if you enjoy video games, there are two things you could do. Go to subscribe to MVGB if you're a more casual gamer. The monthly video game briefing is a monthly video game briefing for people who are not super hardcore into games. If you are hardcore into games, go check out Pixels, a show I do every couple of weeks where we dive much deeper into what it means to be a gamer, to love games. It's a show about games. It's called Pixels.
Folks, we consider ourselves to be three people with more, and including Patrick, four people with more than 60 years of experience covering technology news. And we try to share what we've learned about that with you. And when we make mistakes, and we do, we have the smartest audience in the world to help pick us up and figure out how to understand this. We're all in this together to understand technology. And if you want to be even more of part of it, you should become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. You'll get a column from Roger every week. You'll get Sarah's testing out of gadgets. You'll get my insights into coverage of technology. It's all available at patreon.com/DTNS.
For example, when I say things like Xbox One 10, because, you know, I'm a senior and I have senior moments. That would be a great reason to become a patron. Put me in my place. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
Bye.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
You have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.